I do have a special guest calling in that I have told you about. Seth Nave, a extension soybean agronomist with the University of Minnesota, is here to talk with me about soybeans this morning at my special request. Thank you so much, Seth, for being here. So you work for the University of Minnesota Extension, and particularly with a crop that we all hear a lot about, which is soybeans. And it sounds like not all soybeans are created equal. And I would love it if you'd give us a little bit of background about, you know, how you got involved in this and what your studies are.
Yes, that's a very good question. Yeah, I work on soybean production, so I'm a soybean agronomist. So, you know, my general role for somebody like me is to help farmers produce soybeans more efficiently and produce greater yields and produce increased efficiencies and reduce environmental impacts of that production. But I also have kind of taken on a unique role among agronomists, as I'm also kind of become a bit of an expert on soybean composition. So we tend to produce soybeans that tend to be lower in protein in the northern states like Minnesota and the Dakotas. So our soybeans tend to be discriminated against in the world market.
Okay.
So just because of the protein level. And so I'm trying to better understand what goes into that and if there's any trade-offs there. So it affects both the human food use and the feed use, but of course the vast majority of our soybean protein, at least, is primarily used for feeding animals.
Yes. Yep. And then, but there's more to the story than that, from what I understand in the article I was reading about the extension work.
Yes. So, I'm working on, I'm doing several studies looking at how the composition of soybeans varies by protein level. So if we have lower protein, is there some other advantage or disadvantage to those soybeans that goes along with it? So we're looking at the amino acid balance. So the animals don't really, and humans don't, we don't eat proteins for protein per se. We eat it for the amino acids because we break those proteins down into the amino acids, and there's essential amino acids that our bodies can't manufacture. So we have to eat those protein, either vegetable protein or animal proteins, to be able to maintain and build our bodies. And animals, swine and poultry and aquaculture, it's all the same type of a thing. So we eat foods like rice and beans, for instance, historically, because those offer a very good complement of amino acids. And that's similarly, that's why we feed our swine and poultry corn and soybeans. And so our work really shows that all soybeans aren't created equal, that some have a better compositional proportion of specific amino acids that are good for us or needed for us. And so I work a lot with purchasers of soybeans and try to entice them to look beyond just protein level and start investigating amino acids and understand where those soybeans come from and know that those soybeans may have an advantage in terms of specific amino acids that are more healthy for the animals and humans that they're feeding. Or in some diets, they may not have to add synthetic amino acids to that diet, that they could just utilize the soybean and corn protein.
Hmm. Interesting. And tell us a little bit about the difference between what would be considered food grade soybeans. I assume that means fit for human consumption as opposed to what is just fed to animals.
Sure. So as with corn, most of the soybeans produced in Minnesota and across the U.S., the vast majority are first processed. And so in soybeans situation, it's basically the oil is extracted. And soybean is interesting in that the oil is extracted, and that primarily goes to human use. And then the resulting protein that's left is then primarily fed to animals. So about 95% of the soybeans that we grow are first processed in this way, because the oil, there's such a great demand for vegetable oil for frying, for salad dressings and things like that, and then increasingly for things like biodiesel. So there's a lot of demand for the oil side, and then the protein that's left has a lot of value too. So that's the kind of industrial or the commodity-type soybeans that we produce. But we also produce a significant amount, small but significant amount, of food-grade soybeans, and those go domestically. We have a pretty good industry here producing both tofu and soy milk here in the U.S., but, of course, we just don't eat lots of that as Americans. And so a lot of our food-grade soybeans get exported to Japan primarily, but then also increasingly other countries around Asia are increasingly buying specific varieties of soybeans through what we call IP systems or identity preserve systems for soybeans for very specific end uses. So a tofu maker in Tokyo may want a very specific variety of soybean that's grown in Minnesota, and they may request that. It can be cleaned and shipped in a container, and then they can make their local tofu maker can make it from that. But the Japanese, as a good example, have many, many, many soy products, and they demand a specific soybean and soybean type for each of those. Natto requires a very, very small seeded soybean. Soy sauce, tempehs, and other things require other types. So we try to produce a soybean specifically for them, and in return, then they're willing to give us additional, a higher price for that product because we can provide them exactly what they're looking for.
Hmm. So interesting. And then is there any tofu producing right in the Midwest such that when we buy our tofu, we can know that it was grown and processed right here, a more local food sort of focus?
That's a good question. I know there has been periodically those things have shown up, and there's been, you know, both from a very small scale kind of artisanal kind of production. And I know, in fact, there was a tofu made within the last year. I did see one that was a Minnesota product for sure. So it's a very difficult market because, you know, the tofu is an inexpensive product, in comparison to other foods, and so it's difficult to have the margins to be able to make profits on those things. But I do know there is a small, relatively small scale tofu maker that is selling at some of our grocery stores here. Was at least within the past 6 months or a year to some grocery stores, and then there was a large producer of soy milk. Based, I think, in Sauk Center, and I'm not sure if that facility is still running, but they would produce soy milk that would be branded under some of the large national brands that you would see at the grocery stores for soy milk. So that was kind of a more large-scale endeavor there. So this ebbs and flows a little bit. Certainly the production is here, and then where the actual processing and the making of those foods occurs, you know, that depends on those different industries. And there's been consolidations in things, and those things have moved around a little bit. But yes, it'd be really nice to be able to have these local products, especially tofu that is actually quite a bit better when it is nice and fresh. So it's one of those things that would be nice to have.
Right. I can't help but imagine that's coming because, I mean, generally people that eat tofu would also be generally, you know, aware of the value of fresh and local food and would just, you know, I would think would pay more for something that you know is being grown and produced right here. I know that tofu is such a economy of scale thing. I mean, the stuff we buy in the store, I know is just, who knows where it's processed, but...
And in fact, it's quite, you know, of all the food, manufactured food products, I think it's such an ancient food because it's quite easy to make, it requires basically soybeans and water and then a coagulant. It's about all it takes to produce it, and so it's not a process that requires a lot of equipment or specialized ingredients. So it is certainly something that could be manufactured for sure.
Oh, I just can see it already. I mean, there we go. I mean,
it's
just
farmers market. That's what we need.
With the farmers markets everywhere now, and yeah, that's coming. I'm going to predict it. And we're running out of time, but I'd have one more question that probably isn't quick. But You know, we've had many interviews about regenerative agriculture and feeding the soil. And is there anything you can say specifically about soybeans and its potential for renewing soil as opposed to just depleting it?
Yes, soybean is kind of lives in two worlds on this way. And one, it gets a bad rap because it produces relatively low biomass, so it doesn't, you know, the soybean stems and leaves that are left there's very small amount to cover the surface, and so there's an opportunity for erosion and some things like that. And so then, folks have kind of a negative view of soybean from that aspect. But on the other hand, as a legume, it fixes its own nitrogen and really, especially in a world with higher energy costs, it really helps our system in terms of producing nitrogen for the overall cropping system. So it's really a critical piece from that aspect. So I think that's the most important part. But also, just as a regular crop for rotations, we need more legumes in the system, and we don't have a lot of really good efficient legumes. So soybean probably doesn't need to dominate the landscape if you're thinking about it from a long term large scale area, but we definitely need it as a rotation.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much. This is really interesting and informative, and I have a feeling you know a lot more about other things too that we're not talking about this morning. So I would love to have you on again sometime.
That would be great.
Okay. I'm speaking with Seth Nave. He is a University of Minnesota Extension soybean agronomist, among other things. So thank you, Seth, and have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you. You too.
All right. You take care. That was Seth Nave from the University of Minnesota Extension talking about soybeans.